to the Gateway to the Smokies podcast. This podcast is about America's most visited national park, the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and the surrounding towns. This area is filled with ancient natural beauty, a deep storied history, and rich mountain cultures that we explore with weekly episodes. I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, a man of the world, but also with deep roots in these mountains. My family has lived in the Great Smokies for over 200 years. My business is in travel, but my heart is in culture. Today, we're going to be talking about preserving and perpetuating our culture in the Great Smoky Mountains. But first, a sponsor message or two. And the first sponsor is me. Imagine a place evocative of motor courts of the past, yet modern and vibrant, with a chic Appalachian feel. A place for adventure and full relaxation. Imagine a place where you can fish in a mountain heritage trout stream, grill the catch on a fire, and eat accompanied by fine wine or craft beers. Imagine a place with old-time music and world cultural sounds. There is no other place like the Meadowlark Motel in Maggie Valley, North Carolina. Your Smoky Mountain adventure starts with where you stay. Another sponsor is SmokiesAdventure.com. That's Smokies, plural, adventure, singular.com. The Smokies Mountains and the surrounding area is a vacation destination for all seasons. Some of the nation's best hiking trails, waterfalls, outdoor adventures, and family entertainment can be found right here. Start your adventure by using SmokiesAdventure.com to explore all the wonderful features of the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. Trails and waterfalls and Cades Cove and more. You know, right now, check out the spring flowers that are coming in and crazy beauty. And then check out all the awesome family attractions, entertainment, and things you can do in the surrounding area with you and your family. The goal of Smokies Adventure is to become the leading information portal for adventure and adventures and experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains. So as you know, we'd like to publicize some events that are coming up. And Maggie Valley happens to have a lot of festivals coming up. April 19th through May 1st, we have Thunder and the Smokies Spring Motorcycle Rally. You know that the rides in the mountains of the Smokies are some of the best in the world for doing motorcycle rides or, you know, bicycle rides or any kind. So a lot of people come here to celebrate their passions. And the Thunder in the Smokies is one of the oldest rallies in Maggie Valley and even in the surrounding areas. And it happens on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And it has tour rides, lots of vendors selling crafts and foods, and has bike shows and games and prizes and concerts, fire dancers, and, you know, people jumping up and down and having a good time. So come out and check out thunderinthesmokies.com or call 828-246-2101 to find out more about it. Now, this is a new event, and I'm not even sure what it's about, but it sounds interesting. Then on May 7th, they're going to have something called Boho Hippie Fest. Now, I'm imagining is people in tie-dye dancing and things like that, but they say it's going to be live music, performance arts, demonstration, vendors, bounce houses, games, food trucks. So for more information, contact Hothead Events, 828-246-1978, which is a really good year, or email hotheadevents@gmail.com. And then another traditional one here in the mountains is the KKOA Icons of Hot Rodding Festival, and that's on May 13th and 14th. And this is 1950s and 1960s hot rods and custom cars, trucks and vans, with lots of 50s and 60s music, vintage vendors, pinstripers, food vendors, and they'll be judging with awards and trophies. Reach out to CustomKempOfAmerica.com. That's with K's in place of the C's, except in America. And then we have our own event, the Meadowlark, coming out, and that's Mom's Moving Mountains and Mother Nature's Natural Garden Program with Nancy East and Isla Hatter. Some of you might remember Nancy East did a wilderness survival course here a few weeks back that was well attended and very popular, where she showed us how to survive the 10 things that you needed to go out in the wilderness, how to build a fire, how to build a camp, how to save yourself if you broke your leg and you're stuck in the bottom of a ditch somewhere. And she's just really knowledgeable. She's on the rescue team here, the search and rescue team here in Haywood County and the Smoky Mountains. And she goes on lots of search and rescue missions every season. And so she's going to do on Friday night a whole presentation with pictures and everything of some of the more compelling stories that she has from those search and rescues. And then on Saturday, May 7th, there's going to be a legendary wildcrafting expert here. And she's a renowned author, filmmaker, instructor, and tour guide for the Great Smoky Mountains National Park GSM Field School. And it's Isla Hatter. And she's an expert on edible plants, medicinal herbs, and anything pertaining to wildcraft foraging, Appalachian plants, trees, and flowers. And she's been on television shows, videos, books, and she's just really well known on the subject. And so she is going to present a program entitled Mother Nature's Natural Garden, and leading actually a tour of the grounds and area around here to find out what is the nature's bounty that you can eat right in our own backyards. And then that night we'll culminate with a free barbecue supper, maybe a few of the dishes from the what we find, and then music by Mike Ogletree and some of his friends on Saturday evening. You can reach out to the Meadowlark Motel at 828-926-1717 to reserve a room to stay, or if you're just a local and want to come, it's $20 per person. And you can reach out and reserve your space by calling 828-926-1717. And then on Mother's Day, we're going to have a cake and champagne in the lounge along with our traditional breakfast. So today we have a great guest. He's a legend in these mountain parts, and I think in the whole state, maybe even the nation. And his name is Joe Sam Queen, and he has deep family roots in Haywood County dating back to the Revolutionary War. Born in Waynesville in 1950, and he's a graduate of NC State in architecture. And he's a renowned architect, historian, dancer, dance caller, and politician, having served in both the NC State Senate and the NC House of Representatives. And he's on the traditional artist rosters of the Blue Ridge National Heritage Association. He's been the director of the Smoky Mountain Folk Festival for over 50 years, and has served on the board of directors for the Folk Route and the Shelton House, as well as played an active role as an officer in the local Sons of the American Revolution chapter. When he isn't working in his business or these other organizations, he enjoys calling dances, dancing, spending time as a family, working with his wife, herself an accomplished woman, Dr. Kate Queen, on their own charitable foundation. How are you doing, Sam? Joe Sam?
Joe Sam Queen, a little do re me.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm doing great. It's great to be on your show. It's great to promote all the good heritage and culture of Western North Carolina. We really are a hot spot welcoming the world. So come and see us.
Cool. Well, we're so glad to have you. Now tell me, you know, how did you get a name, Joe Sam? You know, that's an interesting name.
Well, Joe, my grandfather was Sam Love, great name. My father was Sam Love Jr. He didn't like being a junior. And his best GI buddy, he was a Iwo Jima Marine, my father, as his best buddy was Terry Joe Johnson, a Cherokee friend over across the SoCo Gap. And so I'm named after his best buddy, Terry Joe Johnson. And they just called me Joe, and my Aunt Sarah went down to the clerk of the court and said, that's not enough name for a boy. We got to add a Sam in there. So they gave me a little do-re-mi, Joe Sam Queen, and I've loved it all my life.
There you go.
As an architect, I think of Frank Lloyd Wright, and it's just a great name. So
it does have a rhythm to it. It is yeah. Almost like it's a song when you say
it. It is. Name your youngin' with a little poem. That's a good
one. Yeah. So, you know, we have a lot of common in having a deep heritage in Haywood County, and we're both, in different ways. I mean, I think you're more accomplished at it, but we're sharing a passion for preserving and perpetuating our culture while making people aware of the cultural history by encouraging them to create their own Smoky Mountain experiences. And you do a lot of educating of folks in the area, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, my passion is the our regional dance, which it's often referred to as the big ground, but it's a Southern Appalachian square dance. It's an American dance. It's a melting pot dance. It has Scotch Irish. It has Cherokee. It has African American roots, but it's an American dance, and its hot spot is right here in Haywood County.
Oh yeah.
And I follow sort of in my grandfather's footsteps, because he made famous a Maggie Valley square dance team called the Soco Gap Cloggers, which he was part of the cultural revival that radio started with the Carter family and Jimmy Rogers and the early roots of country music and the radio. And dancing, you didn't have music unless you had dance. The musicians followed the dancers. It was a social event. And the dance was so important. And this is a social dance. We call it on the streets of Waynesville, we come out. It's our institution, a hospitality. The let's all join hands in one big circle. That's our motto up here in Western North Carolina.
Well, I think it's great, and it's interesting to talk about radio introducing that. I was reading, I think it was in today's papers, how back in the 1870s, some people came up from, you know, from the north and wrote, did deep stories and about the mountains, and one of them was Waynesville, and really painted us as a violent, ignorant crowd. And so it took a while for it to penetrate back into the whole of the United States that, hey, maybe there's more going on here. You know, and the Great Smoky Mountains opening up, and you know, the great things coming out, and then people finding out this wonderful this dance and everything else. When we come back, you have a story about Roosevelt and your grandfather that I think people would be interested in hearing about.
I'll give it to them.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
This is Joseph Franklin McElroy back with my guest, Joe Sam Queen, on the Gateway to the Smokies podcast. So, Joe Sam, you know, talking about history. Your family, the Queen family, was some of the earliest settlers here in our regions, right?
We followed Rutherford. I've been the representative for the Cherokee and Haywood County, so I don't call myself a native. They're the natives, but we rode in 1776, and we haven't left.
1776, and we haven't left. Wow. So, where did they first settle in the county?
Well, they settled in what they call Raccoon Cove, out by what was known as the Test Farm area. That was my first settling family. They settled down in Fines Creek and then Crabtree, and finally got to Delwood, which is ahead of Maggie Valley, as you know. And so we're known as Delwood Queens in the last couple of generations.
The Queen family sort of became famous for dancing and really popularized the whole thing.
And my grandfather was the great leader there. I sort of follow him. He was the legend. But he was born in 1888 and grew up in a time when the square dancing was really the most important social institution of the community. That's how people gathered together. That's how they courted. That's how they educated their children. The square dance moves are a pre-literate institution to train the young people how to court, how to have manners, how to join the community, how to be a man and a woman in the community. And of course, it was all about the fiddle and the banjo and the music that went with it and the good times. And in the early days, there were no big square dance halls. The big fine square dance halls followed the railroad, and they didn't get here to, the 1910s or something, get up over the mountain. They were late. So they developed some hotels that had big fine rooms that you could have a big square dance in. But prior to that, you danced a little on your porch in front of your fireplace, just to the fiddle and the banjo, and learned to clog and do the little step. But my grandfather came along, in the 20s and 30s, like I said, with radio and the advent of these fine hotels, and they developed a dance ethic, and he put together a square dance team, and they could all dance, and they all buck dance together, just wide open to the music. He said he never gave a lesson. You went with him, show me how to dance, son, just pay attention. You dance with your partner in the circle and to the music. That's all you need to know, son.
Let's clarify some things, I know what it means, but a lot of people don't. You have clogging, buck dancing, square dancing, and flat footing. Now, what are all those?
Well, they're all a community of terms. Clogging comes from sort of our Scotch-Irish German ancestors. And again, they had wood shoes and they clogged a bit. They danced, but their shoes weren't good leather shoes, and they were on a small porch or a little cobblestone street. Now, we didn't have any streets out here in Western North Carolina. We were yard dancers.
Right.
We had a fine sheep sheared pasture to dance in before we had wood floors. Mm-hmm. So we had a big dance, and we took from the Cherokee the big circle. The big circle is the Cherokee contribution, and there's plenty of moves like the big black snake, which we call wind the clock a lot of times, but they call it the Cherokee friendship dance. But it's the same thing that we integrated into the American square dance, the Appalachian square dance. But then there's flat footing, which is a little softer version, a little more musical, jazzy version of flat footing. It's quite creative. Everybody does it a little differently. You, as a flat footer, you develop your style. You develop your few little steps, your little lick, as they say. And if you're in a circle, some of the modern teams all dance precision, but that's very contemporary. The traditional teams, every dancer danced to the music his own way, as he heard it.
And buck dancing was
buck dancing is another term again, it's an African-American term. The African-American was the buck. Well, the buck wasn't allowed before integration to enter the circle, but they were often the musicians and they were often great dancers. So they danced. And even on Main Street, they would, you go to the, when I was a little boy, we'd go to Waynesville to get a haircut, and in the barber shop, there'd be a lad shining shoes who could slap the rhythm with his rag on the shoe, or he could play the harmonica. And my grandfather get up and buck dance, and the African-American shoe shiner get up and try to out dance him. And they would, that's what you call buck dancing.
So, you know, I used to tell people, you know, that, in the mountains, in America, a lot of times there was a reputation that white men don't dance, right? Won't get up and dance by themselves. I said, hey, listen, I was born and raised dancing by myself, doing something called buck dancing.
Yeah, buck dancing. But it comes from the African-American tradition, because they often, my grandfather was taught how to call by an African-American fiddler and blacksmith when he was just a little boy. He never got to join the circle, but he was a fiddler, so he's often the musician on the side of the dance. And so he knew the dance, he knew the call. So he gave my grandfather some lessons. And my grandmother, my grandfather's mother, my great-grandmother, his mother, taught him to do the flat foot and to follow the step in the barn loft, because that's the only wooden floor they had as much count to dance in.
Well, you know,
a lot of times we had dances in the barn loft. Between hay and tobacco, we'd have a dance.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting that so many people don't really know that there's a lot of West African tradition in mountain culture. You know, like bluegrass itself, the banjo is from West Africa.
That's right.
And you know, it really took Scottish-Irish ballad music and added a beat to it, rhythm, right? And that made it a whole new music that just went crazy all over the nation.
See, our rhythm, we don't have a drum. We have the foot. We have the clog step. And then the banjo had the banjo head, so you could wrap it with your finger and slap it if you wanted to. But it was African in origin, and it really took off in the Civil War, when soldiers could carry it and sport it around.
Mm-hmm. So your grandfather just sort of pulled all this together and really started, you created the Soco Gap Cloggers.
The Soco Gap.
And that sort of became sort of famous, right?
They were awesome. They could dance like nobody else. Everybody's trying to be what those guys could. The gals and the fellas, they could just dance like whirlwinds. Well, my grandfather put this team together, and Roosevelt made him famous, quite frankly. Roosevelt was beloved in the mountains. He brought us out of the Great Depression. My father and Uncle Richard, they were GIs. They loved Roosevelt. Well, Roosevelt in 39 was trying to get the Congress, which was pacifist and obstructionist in its time. He was trying to get them to pass the Lend-Lease provision so they could help Great Britain survive. And they were being very reluctant. So he invited the King and Queen of England for the only royal visit in history in 1939. And part of Roosevelt's cultural diplomacy was that instead of having a black tie ball for the King and Queen of England, which would be kind of traditional, he decided to have an American square dance in the White House for the King and Queen of England. And so he could show that the people of the British Isles and the American people were one people. That was part of Roosevelt's political genius and his cultural diplomacy. So my grandfather went up there with the Soco Gap Cloggers, and their band was the Coon Creek Sisters, an all women string band out of Kentucky. And their famous number is "How many biscuits can you eat?" You know, a half a dozen and a ham of meat, you know, they were great, and that was the primary entertainment for the King and Queen of England for their what would have been a black tie ball. And it went on the newsreels and all over the world, and Life and Post, and it was a big deal. So the Soco Gap Cloggers became the rave of the nation, and my grandfather was their leader.
That's fantastic. I heard that your grandmother was also quite a dancer too. She was dancing at 96.
Well, his mother was.
His mother.
Valley Queen. She was the famous dancer. My grandmother would dance a little, but she pretty much let Sam carry on in his own way. Sam was a force of nature. We call him the old man Sam, but dancing Sam locally. Because my father was Sam, and I'm a Sam. We're the Sam Queen brand, so you got to kind of distinguish one generation from the other. Uh-huh. But Sally was a great dancer too.
Cool, and she was dancing till 96.
That's 96.
Wow. Yep. So there's a lot of dance styles that are sort of in a way considered indigenous to the United States, even though that's very debatable. But you have Western square dance. And then you have, things that people claim are similar, which is the Irish dancing. How are these all different from what we know as square dance?
Well, again, our dance, the people here that settled in Maggie Valley in Haywood County in West North Carolina, were Scotch-Irish. We came in with Rutherford on, who was Scotch-Irish. The Scotch-Irish Trail, we settled early. They liked the isolation and the fertility of the mountains. It's reminded of their homeland, and a lot of Germans. So we had cloggers from German, we had Scotch Irish. Now the Scottish and Irish were not very urban, particularly the Scots. They were rural. Mm-hmm. So they were yard dancers. So as I said, they danced in the pasture, and they were big circle dancers. A lot of the Germans and anybody that came from town, they would dance on a cobblestone street with things like the reel. A Virginia reel is a linear dance, but our dance is not linear, and it's not defined by size. It's not an eight couple dance. It can be 200 couples. We had the big circle dance, and we really got that from the Cherokee friendship dance and their large circle dance around their fire and their social celebrations. So
I think that's a good
African-Americans brought a ton of step along with the Irish, along with the German, along with even the English and Welsh had a certain amount of fiddling and step dancing that they did. And it melted in the great American part of America. And the reason we have a collar is the collar decides what you're going to dance. If you were coming from a German village, you knew your dance. Nobody had to call it. You had started and you went through it to the end. By the time you were old enough to dance, you'd learn to dance. But in America, they shared little pieces from everybody's culture, little German, little Scotch, mm-hmm. little Irish, little African-American, little Cherokee, and they mixed it all together. So you always had a collar that managed the mix.
Cool. Well, we have to take another break, and we'll come back. We'll talk more about calling a square dance.
Thank you.
Howdy. Hey, Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc.
now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Howdy, this is Joseph Franklin McElroy back with the Gateway to the Smokies podcast and my guest, Joe Sam Queen, a musical note. So, I read on the Blue Ridge Heritage, cultural site, you have an entry about being an area craftsman and entertainer and everything else. And you said sociability is the whole point of the Appalachian dance.
That's right.
Is that really the essence of it? Is getting together to be sociable and bring people in?
That's right. It is our social institution of hospitality. It's an institution of hospitality. But I'll just give you an example. The opening line is, let's all join hands in one big circle. Mm-hmm. We're a community. Let's join hands together. It's sort of like table fellowship. And then the women wrote a lot of the dance calls. They helped the men, like, you go right hands across and halfway back. Halfway back is the first lesson in life. You can change your mind. And then it's ladies in front and gents behind. Well, the next lesson in life, gentlemen, you need to learn to follow your ladies. You know, you're not always the one out front. And then it's honor your partner, honor your opposite. Right hands across with a how do you do? A left hand's back with a fine thank you. That's a little lesson in hospitality and manners. So it's socializing country bumpkins. You know,
interesting.
They got to learn to come in court and not get in a fist fight over the girl next door. You know, they got to share in the dance. Oh my goodness. Well, that's one lesson in life for an Appalachian male.
That's interesting. That's like the teaching the youth, and especially teenagers, you know, how to be more civilized. Yeah. I didn't even think about that.
It's a pre-literate institution of instruction and socializing and being sociable, intergenerational. The first move is the grand right and left, where you go one way and the girls go one way and the boys go the other, and the girls meet all the boys. Because when you entered the dance, you're probably dancing with your first cousin, but you're looking around for some other gal to dance with. Uh-huh. And she's glad to start with her, but she's looking around for another lad to dance around there too with. And, and these are guys up the holler that you only see a few times when you get together with some local musicians to have a little dance. That's the only society going around in rural Appalachia in the 1800s.
You have a limited time to get them sociable, don't you?
That's right. And it's hugely fun. I mean, it's not line dancing. It's not you squeeze these gals. You know, as my grandfather says, you can tell their weight, by golly. When you get done with this dance, you can tell how they're doing. And it's a very sociable dance.
It's interesting.
We had to sort of hold off a little during COVID because it is so close. But we're hoping to start it back this summer.
You should be able to now. I was reading today that this last thing of COVID, 75% of kids, you know, I got a three-year-old, so they caught it. This last one, you know, 75% of kids caught it, so it's pretty much done for kids. So you should be able to get together. But you know, the thing that struck me is that you're teaching people nursery rhymes. Back in the day, yeah, was also about teaching, and a lot of nursery rhymes actually were dealing with how to deal with some dark stuff. Is there any kind of that tradition in the music as well, to deal with some dark emotions and things like that, dark events?
I like to say the four-leaf clover. I like to introduce it. It's It's you all join hands, all four. It's two couples. The American Square Dance, the Appalachian Square Dance is a big round. So you start with big round. Everybody in the circle does one, and then you break up into figure fours. You and your partner and an opposite couple, right. And then you change after every figure four. Well, the four leaf clover is you all join the four of you join hands. And you turn yourself inside out and tie yourself into a knot, which mm-hmm. you back off and it looks like a four-leaf clover. Then you back out and untie yourself from that knot. And so you tie yourself into a knot and you untie yourself and you never break fellowship. So that is another little story of how you navigate life. And then it's duck for the oyster and duck for the clam and throw away the old tin can. That's kind of a pollution story, you know?
Oh, interesting.
There's a ton of them, and shoot the buffalo, which is like our ocean wave. We have a lot of in the mountains. We have a lot of moves like a move like ocean wave. We're a long way from the ocean, but the Scotch Irish all live by the sea, and a lot of the Germans and other immigrants did. So they tell about the sea to their children and family in the mountains of North Carolina, even though we're a long way from it. Mm. A lot of them never got to see the sea again, but they still dance to the thought.
Wow. You know, I was talking to some, we had some, you know, some musicians that are pretty good come over, bluegrass musicians come to the motel and play, you know, Darren Nicholson and some of his fellows and things. And one of them was talking to him. He said,
awesome range. We got some awesome great.
Oh, yeah. They said, you know, in bluegrass, there's a tradition of what a band can comprise of. And if you go away from that tradition, the bluegrass mafia will come after you. Now, in square dancing, I mean, it's pretty much a lot of times bluegrass. But what are the requirements of a square dance band? What are the instruments?
They're the classic bluegrass followed from old time. Uh-huh. Old time music is folk music and it's dance music. It's got a dance rhythm. A lot of bluegrass is so fast you have to be a weed eater if you're going to keep up with it.
Right, yeah.
Actual square dance music has a nice beat. It's very sociable. You can dance with your partner, keep the beat. That's why you say flat footing is tapping the music. It's the banjo, the fiddle, the bass, the stand-up bass, and the guitar.
Right.
So it's
never a drum or anything like that. Never a horn.
Never a drum. Ever so often they'll play a paper sack, flappity, 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 or the spoons, or they'll wrap the head of a banjo, and then it's the clogged step is adds the drum. But no, there's no real drum to traditional music.
Wow. So now callers, you know, you're a caller, right? Yeah. Now, how do people become callers to lead these things? Did they experience or did they study it or what was the requirements?
Well, most of them, it's just experience. You go to a lot of dances, you get the sense of it. You got a decent memory, you sort of have to pay attention because you're instructing and watching the circle dance and calling it on beat so it moves appropriately with the music and has a nice flow to it. It's not hard to be a caller, but you have to sort of pay attention. As my grandfather said, you're dancing in the circle with your partner and to the music. That's all you need to know.
But wasn't a caller like almost a band vocalist? I mean, it is sort of the vocalist of the band.
You get to sing the song. You get to make up the tunes, you know. A lady round a lady and the gent don't go. Lady round the gent and the gent go slow. That's one where you let your partner go around the opposite man and look him over. Then come back in the circle. Then the opposite lady gets to come around to you, but you don't get to go. So it's a way to let the ladies have a turn in smoking over the gentleman, which is usually the opposite the way it is. Again, the ladies wrote a lot of these little ditties to strain their gentlemen to be respectful.
Be respectful. Oh, that's interesting. So a caller had to learn. I mean, how many different calls are there? Do you know?
Oh, there's probably scores and scores for sure. You know, in a dance, you end up calling the primary dozen, mm-hmm. because you wear them out with, if you do that many, you know. Like we do a 2-hour street dance in Waynesville, we probably call 4 to 5 sets, because you have the figure four, and then you have the big circle dances, which is really just lots of fun. You all join hands. We do folk move here in Western North Carolina, which is international folk dance.
Right.
Because we're a hot spot of traditional folk dance. Our Appalachian American authentic folk dance is right here. So we've welcomed the world to bring theirs. So they come from Ukraine. They've been from Ukraine. They've come from Lebanon. They've come from Australia. They've come from China and South America. A lot of folk dances have this big circle gathering for sure. They often have little sets. The American square dance team is 8 to 10 couples, but the actual social dance has no limit. You can have 20, 50 couples in a dance.
Now, do these other traditions have a caller?
And the American tradition has callers, but most of the other traditions don't.
Uh-huh.
That, because they all come from a village or a single place, where America is really the melting pot. We e pluribus unum, out of many one. So we need a caller to set the tone. And the different caller is different sort of place.
So the caller is a dynamic composer.
He's a composer. He really is.
Wow.
He'll make the poem. He'll make the motion to some little poetry, and it helps you remember it. It helps you keep it straight in the dance.
Wow. Well, I guess callers are traditionally have been pretty much in demand, haven't they?
Well, they are. They help. My grandfather was in huge demand.
Oh, wow, yeah.
He danced somewhere from in 1935 to 1955. He danced somewhere almost every night of the week.
Wow.
He'd go to one big hotel, one big dance hall after another. He would go all around. I mean, if you had a big political event, you had a big square dance. I politicked by, let's all join hands in one big circle. That's my political mantra. That's my social mantra. That's what I stand for. So it's a great metaphor for community and politics, quite frankly.
Cool. Well, we got to take another break, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more about calling and other stories that you might have to give us.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Calling all pet lovers.
Pet Avengers, assemble!
On the Professionals and Animal Lovers show, we believe the bond between animal lovers is incredibly strong. It mirrors that bond between pets and their owners. Through this program, we come together to learn, educate, and advocate.
Join us live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
Howdy, this is Joseph Franklin McElroy back with Gateway to the Smokies podcast, and my guest, the legendary Joe Sam Queen. So, Joe, talking about calling and square dancing and the music, are you finding that young people today are becoming callers and becoming fiddlers and stuff in a square dance, or is it dying out?
No, it's not dying out. We work to keep it alive. That's why I do the Smoky Mountain Folk Festival, to keep young musicians coming forward. We have the Junior Appalachian Musicians, which we teach string music. That's the fiddle, the banjo, the bass, the guitar, in a little ensemble band after school, a little after school program, Appalachian music. We always, part of our folk festival, we have a little outside tent. We let the young folks come in, have a little part of the show. Their elders are on the main stage, but beforehand, we let everybody have a little turn. So we keep bringing it on. We have an active group of square dancers. We're trying to bound back after COVID. I mean, COVID, square dancing was definitely a spreader event. So we sort of laid low for the last couple of years, but we're feeling fairly comfortable that this summer will be a summer of dance again.
No more sociability distancing.
Yeah, no more sociability. Square dancing is not distancing. It's
close.
It's joining together.
So are you got some little callers coming up, some good ones?
Yeah, we callers are, they're not just a dime a dozen good ones. They never have been. A lot of good bands, and you don't have good music if you don't have dance. So my grandfather, he kept a lot of musicians alive, because in the 30s and 40s, and you didn't have any money floating around, but you could have a dance, you could pass the hat, and they could get enough for a fifth of liquor, you know, before the night's out, you know. So they counted that a big success and had a big time doing it.
Well, cool. So you're involved in a lot of things. You mentioned Folk Moot. You're involved with, that. Is Folk Moot coming back this summer, or is it going to be another?
Yeah, they're trying. You know, they have had a couple of double whammies. They had 9/11, which really interrupted international travel. What Folk Moot is, for people that don't know, is we are here in Haywood County. We have the International Folk Festival, the finest one in America, in the Northern Hemisphere, without question. It's right here. It's in Western North Carolina. We go to 20 communities when they're here. We have an old elementary school we've taken over, and we house 8 or 10 dance teams, sometimes a dozen, from all over the world. They're all internationals. They come, they bring their musicians. Every dance team has a band with them. I mean, we've had some fabulous bands.
It's stupendous. It's just stupendous.
It's really stupendous. And we look at this as world, where the world meets on Main Street. Right. Just like the sociability for our people, we do this for the world right here, because folk dancing, all joining hands in one big circle, is a world mantra. Right.
My wife is from Trinidad and is a Brazilian drummer, and she. I got her to come to Maggie the first time because of Folk Moot. So, it really, early when we were dating, it was like, wow, they do this international thing. And she's from Trinidad. So, it's a thing that makes people feel welcome. I think it's one of the best things we've ever done here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. It's still coming back. So people, just keep your ears open. We're going to bring it back. You know, I'll say this a little bit. You started off with some of your sponsors. Another international hotspot we are for birds. We are the neotropical warblers hotspot in this hemisphere, the Western Hemisphere, coming up from South America, crossing the Gulf, and they nest in this great Smoky Mountains. These little warblers sing. They're magnificent. Right now, the month of May is the time to see them, because they come in, the leaves haven't hardly gotten out, so you can find them. They're small, they're very vocal and sociable little creatures, and they're courting, and they're vocalizing and capturing their territory and their mate, and they sing like, songbirds. They are the songbirds of the world. right here in Western North Carolina, we have more than any other place in the world.
I'm literally, if you go in the backyard in our wooded area, you'll see a dozen different types of warblers. I mean, right into the Smoky Mountains. It's incredible.
And every thousand feet you rise, you get another population of different birds.
Yeah.
And we have like at least four or five tiers of warblers that come all the way across the Gulf every summer to nest in the Great Smokies.
Well, we're running out of time. I wanted to hit one other thing that you're involved with. You know, I was in Waynesville has a pretty well-known theater called Hart Theater.
Oh yeah.
And back in the day, I did a couple performances in there, and in the last decade or two, you built a theater, an actual real great facility, and you were involved in that, right?
I was their architect, and it's as fine an Appalachian structure of wood as you'll find in America. So come to the Hart Theater. Anything we do there is good. I can tell you anything. We have won the National Community Theater Award at that theater twice in the last 8 or 9 years. We've represented America in Edinburgh, the famous Scottish Theater Festival, in Prague for the famous European Theater Festival. So anything we do is great. If you want to be, it is really a thing not to miss in Haywood County, the Hart Theater.
Cool. And we just have a couple minute or two. So you and your wife, Dr. Kate Queen, have a charitable foundation. What can you tell us about that?
Well, you know, we've enjoyed doing well, but doing good our whole life. I'm a practice architecture. She's a doctor. And we support lots of things from the Sons of the American Revolution to Shelton House to Hart Theater to the Arts Council in Haywood County to, just lots of good things. We just try to be part of the community, as I think so many Americans do. It's a great heritage in America to give back.
And what's the name of your foundation?
It's just the Queen Family Foundation.
So is there any other things you'd like to shout out, links, websites, social media, anything you want to mention?
Well, vote Democrat, I'll tell you. I know it's not a political show, but
yeah,
it's important. And, at your place, at Metal Arc, not too long ago, we honored Charles Miller and Earl Lanning, and they are both friends of the American Revolution. So we're just 4 or 5 years from the 250th anniversary of the American Revolution. So we are trying to expand on our Revolutionary War heritage here in North Carolina, particularly Western North Carolina, where we had the militia and the flintlock rifle. I mean, the reason we have the Second Amendment is the flintlock rifled gun was a very different weapon than the musket. and they were deadly and sharp.
Yeah.
And the British didn't like them at all because they could shoot the eye out of an officer.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, thank you so much for being on this show. It's been a pleasure talking to you, learning about, the traditions of mountain music. And I'm very proud of the accomplishments you have done for Haywood County and North Carolina and the United States. As I said, you're a legend, and you deserve any accolades that you get.
You're so kind. Thank you. Thank you, Joseph.
You're welcome. This is the Gateway to the Smokies podcast, and you can find out more about it at facebook.com/gateway-to-the-smokies-podcast, or you can go to talkradio.nyc and find the show there, and it's streamed live. Talkradio.nyc is a great network of free live podcasts every day that range from self-help to small business to travel to politics to pets. You know, it's one of those talk networks that you don't know what you might hear next, though it's all scheduled out. This podcast is every Tuesday at 6 until 7, talking about the Smoky Mountains. I also run another podcast called Wise Content Creates Wealth, which is about marketing and content marketing and the coming evolution of AI into marketing, and insights of how you could take advantage of that to build your business and your nonprofit and your opportunities. So I hope you'll show up for that. And that's on Fridays from noon until one. And I thank you for listening to this show, and I'll see you next week.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Informed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.